Okay, today we're looking at a matter of choice, talking about the idea of, I think it's one of the most powerful concepts that we can entertain and observe in our daily life is the role that choice makes. We have quite an array of choices available to us in just about every department you can imagine. I see cars go by that are new and colors I've never seen before. You know, there's so many choices. Things keep coming up. New options keep presenting themselves. And that makes perfect sense because we are expressions of God. We are expressions of the unlimited. And so we will never stop inventing. We will never stop offering choices. We will never stop making choices, and we will never stop experiencing the results of our choices. And it's important for us to understand this, that choices are not being made for us. That's kind of the sort of a default way of thinking that in some people's mind, I should say, that life is sort of predestined, that our experience is here. It's kind of mapped out in a way that if we're doing everything right and we're following that certain pattern, we unfold in a certain way. But it seems that the universe is always, or life on Earth at least, is always adapting and changing to new courses of possibilities. I've shared with you several times there have been major catastrophes that have occurred on this planet, asteroid impacts or volcanoes, earthquakes, all kinds of things that have actually changed the course and the whole nature of the planet. Some species have gone extinct. Some have proliferated as a result. We, the mammals, are part of the ones that survived the dinosaur extinction 65 million years ago, the impact that happened then. So it's like the universe is always prepared to start remaking itself. It doesn't really seem to have a goal. And I think we live with that idea that there is a goal for each one of us. And that goal is, I think, is unlimited expression. That there's no end to what we can do or what we can be, except in our own thinking. And when you really think about what that means, that's a choice. There's nothing that restricts us other than our own thinking and our own emotion, our own self-perception. And so that's what we want to look at, is that dynamic of choice and how to use that consciously. And so often I think we don't use it consciously. We're making choices that we're not even aware of. They're knee-jerk reactions to things in life. And we make a choice without even realizing we made a choice. And so it's just something to be aware of. And that's what we're here to do today. So Jesus said, used a parable to illustrate this very important principle. He said, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net which was thrown into the sea and gathered fish of every kind. When it was full, men drew it ashore and sat down and sorted the good into vessels, but threw away the bad. You may think, how is that a description of the kingdom of heaven? Because it really doesn't make a lot of sense when you think of heaven in the general way that we often think about it, as a place that's either going to be established here on earth or that place we go when we die. And this verse is followed by one that was probably added by a later writer. And he's interpreting this as, and this is how most people interpret it because it's in the Bible, so it will be at the close of the age. The angels will come out and separate the evil from the righteous and throw them into the furnace of fire. Their men will weep and gnash their teeth. So there'll be a lot of tooth gnashing in those later days. What is interesting about this is Jesus probably gave the part about the, you know, throwing the net into the sea and drawing out fish of every kind. But somebody else came along and added the interpretation, their interpretation of what this is. And what it is, it's an example of apocalyptic writing that was always predicting the end times and the you know, the future times when the kingdom will be established. And here it's a very scary thought, you know, that which fish am I going to be? You know, am I going to be the one that's kept or one that's thrown away and burn in the fire? So I think we're better off leaving off that second part. And, you know, some will think that's pretty arrogant to even make a statement like that, but I would recommend it, because the way the Bible was written, it was pieced together over a long period of time. And the authors started probably with just a list of sayings from Jesus. And there are such things as, they're called sayings gospels. And that's a gospel that is nothing but sayings. There's no story. And the best example of that that is kind of prominent in a lot of people's minds these days is the Gospel of Thomas, discovered in 1945, I think it was. It was known of prior to that, but when the Nag Hammadi Library was discovered in Nag Hammadi, Egypt, it 2 years before the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, actually. This was among those writings, the Gnostic writings. And you find this Gospel of Thomas is a list of 114 sayings attributed to Jesus. And some of those sayings are familiar to us. They're in the four Gospels. But that's a sayings gospel. So these writers took a list of sayings and they wrote the story around them. And then other writers came along and added things they wanted to get across, points they wanted to make. So we have to understand that there is a mystical thread probably that can be traced directly back to Jesus. But there's a lot of other stuff in there. And people get hung up on a lot of the other stuff. I had somebody talking to me about the, asking me questions about the end times, quoting from the book of Revelation and just asking what I thought of that. And I said, I'm not the least bit worried about it. Just people have been talking about this forever. And it's like, you know, when's the world going to end? I can't wait. You know, just let's get it over with. Let's get it on. There's this feeling that God's going to come and do it. And probably that idea of destruction is tied into actual events, you know, like an asteroid impact or something that happened way back that caused flooding and caused fires and caused all kinds of things. You know, usually the fire that's talked about in the Bible in terms of a punishment comes down from heaven, exactly the same place that asteroids come from. You know, it happens, it blows everybody up, and there's some people that live through that, and they have this memory and recollection, and then they start layering that event with all these moral stories, you know, God did this, and because everybody was evil and whatever. I mean, we add all this stuff to it. But if you look for the actual principle that's given, say, in this first section about people sitting down, you go fishing, you got this net full of fish, some are good, some are bad, you throw away the ones you don't want, you keep the ones you do. Well, that's what prayer is. That's what prayer is. It is a conscious releasing of the bad fish, or releasing of energy that we don't want, and a taking on of energy that we do, a keeping of the fish, throwing them in the vessel and keeping those. If we are in a situation that something is making us afraid, we could ask God for more strength, or we could start doing what the fishermen do. We could start throwing away the bad fish. Why am I afraid? I now release this energy of fear. I let go of that. And I open myself to this greater good is unfolding through this situation now. This is the good fish. It's an inner process that we engage in. in just about everything that we do, Paul talked about praying without ceasing, and that's really what we're doing. We're always making choices. And the problem is, when we're not conscious of it, we usually hang on to the bad fish. We hang on to fish we don't want, and we throw away the good ones. Where does your peace of mind go when you're afraid? You know, you toss it. You don't put it in the vessel and save it. Your peace of mind is the first thing to go. And what's the first thing you keep? The fear. You hang on to the fear. Let's keep that fear going. I have ever reason to be afraid, you know, and we magnify that. We go over it and over it and over it. I hate this fish, but I can't throw it away. I've got to hang on to it. Somehow I feel obligated to be afraid. You can actually change your experience in the midst of any kind of experience. When you're emotionally out of control, you can actually bring yourself back, and you've all done this different times, but we forget that we have this ability. And it seems like a placebo to just stop fearing. But we don't want to just stop fearing. We don't want to just throw the bad fish away. We want to keep the good fish. We want to actually make a change in what we know is true. Not just at the feeling level, but a change in what we know is true. I know this is true. And when you know something's true, then you don't have to fight away the fear. When you know something's true. Choice plays a major role in the quality of our life takes on. Some will say, no, it's our thinking that influences our life. But each thought that we think is a choice. Every feeling that we feel is a choice. And again, we don't always think that. You know, somebody can say something to us that's maybe very offensive, and we think, I have no choice but to get angry at this person. What choice do I have? You know, just look at what they said. Listen to what they said. They said it to you, you'd get angry too. Yeah, I would. So let's all get angry together. You know, that's a choice. And it's okay to do that. And that's the other thing we have to realize. It's okay that we lose control. It's okay that we lose emotional and mental control. It's okay that we make a choice for thoughts and feelings that are destructive. It's all right. But that's our choice. And the question is it all right with us? Are we willing to live with that? Are we willing to make that the standard of our quality of our life at this moment? People and circumstances may influence our thought, but we have to agree to allow this to happen before it can. And all of these things happen so fast. You know, we're so used to just responding to things mentally and emotionally, making those choices so fast that we don't even realize we're doing it, and saying, I didn't choose to feel this way. You know, it's just, that's what's going on out there, and I'm justified in doing that. So that's a choice. It's a choice to think that way, to think that I'm justified in feeling bad because the situation in front of me looks pretty bad. But that's not really the issue that we want to deal with from a spiritual point of view. It's not what's going on out there that we're concerned about. Because as I've said many times, there's always going to be something out there that we don't agree with, something that's always going to be saying, you should not feel as good as you want to. You should not be as happy as you would like to be. You should not think positive about the situation because there's no hope. There's no reason to think positive about it. That's okay to go that way too, but it's not okay with us when we're trying to improve the quality of our life. And where does that happen? Where is the quality of our life happening? It's happening right here. You can't move into the future. You can't move into the past. You can only experience this now moment. And what determines the quality of your experience in this now moment but your thinking and your feeling? It's those things that make the quality of your experience what it is. And this is not a sermon. You know, we're just observing, calling to our attention here again, something we all know, that our thinking is important and our emotions are important. But what's most important is who is in control of these, who's in charge of these, who's making the choices for my emotions and my thoughts. Who or what is doing that? Is it me or is it something else? And that's what we ask ourselves. So the fishermen catch a variety of fish and make a choice to keep what they want and discard the rest. Think of this as the principle involved in prayer. We release the energy of negativity and affirm what is true at the level of the absolute. If you are in a situation and you are feeling like the thing is bigger than you, the problem that is in front of you is bigger than you, then you are making a choice to characterize that situation in that way. And all the facts may be on your side in doing that. All the facts may be on your side. So what is prayer? Is prayer saying, God, I'm this little person having this big problem. I don't know how to handle this. Would you give me some more strength? Would you give me a way to get through this so I can do that? And if God was a man, if God truly was the old man in the sky that could talk to you, he would say, well, I've already given you that. You already have everything you need. You are bigger than this thing you're seeing right now. It's just that you've stopped the movie on a certain frame, and it looks like life is bad. So I've given you the strength already. I've given you the intelligence. I've given you the life, the power, everything you need to deal with this situation. But you're looking at it, and you're stopping the whole movie, and you're saying, this is bad, and I don't know what to do. God, give me something that you have not given me. So God has also given us an imagination and faith and the ability to see through things, even when we can't see through them, to see beyond. And how do we do that? We begin to say, even when we don't know that there's an answer available, that the greater good is now unfolding through me. Remember the story of Elijah, you know, praying for rain, and there was only a cloud the size of this long drought, cloud the size of a man's hand, it says. And that's all it took for him to know that the greater good that they needed was there. And he ordered that trenches be dug. Get ready for the rain. You know, that's a shift in attitudes, a shift in perception. Right in the face of the problem. So he made a choice that nobody else was making. He was opening himself up. You know, the whole idea of digging the trenches, digging cisterns to hold water where there is no water, that's the imagination. Dig the trenches and imagine them full. You know, dig the trenches and imagine them full. Is that crazy? It's a choice. It's a way to deal with the problem that you're having. Whatsoever you ask for in prayer, believe you've received it, and it shall be yours. That's the principle. And principles don't necessarily go by facts. In fact, we engage the principle when the facts are against it. That's the point of prayer. Prayer is saying no to what we don't want. And what is it that we don't want? When you stop and think about it, it's the picture I have of myself of being smaller than this problem. That's what I don't want, because that's what makes me feel bad. I feel so powerless against this mighty giant. So we have the ability to look at that mighty giant and shrink it down in our minds into something manageable. And even though we can't see the answer to it, we can get the feeling that it's okay. A greater good is now unfolding through me, through this situation. It's in divine order. And to hold that thought, dig the trenches, let even when the rain is not here yet, let yourself know that the greater good is going to fill those trenches in some way. And I say all the time, you don't have to know how that's going to work. You don't have to know the answer. So often the answers come in ways that we're not even really thinking about. And what I have noticed more often than not is they come about in ways that I barely even noticed. Next thing you know, it's fixed. The problem's passed. But what I also notice is, like, one day I can be totally out of control emotionally, and the next day, without doing anything, everything looks different. I feel better. It's because I've allowed time to pass and probably let things go through the night or whatever. Or it works the other way, too. Have you ever been awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning by some inner terror that you can't stop? And you just know that your world is going to collapse. That asteroid has got a bead on you, and it's going to take you out. This whole thing is going to just take you out. And everything's quiet except your mind. And if you could hear your mind, it would probably sound like a tin can full of bolts rattling around, making a lot of racket. It's that same principle I've talked about. You know, my grandparents lived on a farm when I was growing up, and we'd go out there. It was just a small house, but they had a clock, you know, one of these mantle clocks with the pendulum and all, and you wind it up, and you barely notice it in the daytime, but on a hot summer night, no air conditioning, you can hear crickets, but that thing would go off, and it would sound like somebody was banging a gong, you know, just everything's magnified at that time. Well, what is that? It's your senses are not engaged in anything but that. And so it's magnified. And when you are laying awake worrying about something, it's magnified. Best thing to do, I find, is get up. Go do something. You say, yeah, but it's 2 o'clock, I got to sleep. Well, you're not sleeping anyway. Get up and do something. Get up until you fall asleep. Do anything. Make a choice to change your mind, to change the experience you're having. Actually, I prefer to get up early. I got up at 3:30 this morning, and I like that. I like getting up early. But those moments when you are wide awake, cannot sleep, and you're terrified, and we all have those. Do something different. Get up, move around, pick up a book, go make some tea, do something to change that pattern, because you have not lost your strength. You've lost your focus. That's the important thing. And prayer is bringing that back. It's making a new choice. It's throwing those bad fish out and keeping the good ones. So an example of this process is, say, a healing prayer, and this is very simplified, because a prayer is not really words. It's what you do. It's what the words suggest that you actually do. That's what a prayer is. That's what's important. But I now release the appearance of this illness, that this illness is real. And I fully embrace the truth that God is my unfailing source of wholeness. So the first half, we're throwing out the bad fish. I now release the appearance that this illness is real. Now, we don't just say those words. We get to the place in ourselves where we actually do this. I let go of that energy that I'm pouring into the appearance, and I make a change. I make a new choice. And then taking the good fish from our net is, I fully embrace the truth that God is my unfailing source of wholeness. And again, that is an experience. It's not just words. We let ourselves make that transition where we actually know the truth of this. My soul cannot be sick. There's nothing at the spiritual level in me that can be sick. I'm not subject to the things the body is subject to. And if the body is undergoing something, my first thought is, I'm not my body. I have this body. But my body responds. You know how you can break out into a cold sweat when you're nervous? That's your body responding to your nervousness. And what is nervousness? You're looking at a thing and you're afraid to do it. If I invited any of you to come up here and give a talk right now, if I just pointed at one of you and said, come up here and give a talk, think you'd get nervous? Think you'd break out into a cold sweat? Some of you would, some of you would not. But that is, it's perception. And so often I'll find myself doing that. I'll be projecting something I haven't done before that I have to do, that something's coming up. And the body responds to that. The body doesn't just do that on its own, because it's the mind that's going through the experience. The body's just following us along. So we make that separation, and you don't just, you know, say words. You look for what the words mean, and try to get into that experience. Same with the prospering prayer. I now release this appearance of lack. So you've got a situation going on. You can't pay a bill. You know, something's popped up that's more than you thought it ought to be, or think you more than you think you have. So you release this appearance of lack. Forget the actual issue. It's the emotion, the energy. I release that. I release that energy, that appearance, my response to that appearance, I should say. For I know God is my unfailing source of abundance. And know that. It is so important to know that there are many channels through which our good comes, but one source. And one channel may dry up, and when that happens, you know, God has not changed. Something else opens up. And that's an attitude of, it's faith. It's our imagination working with our faith. And we don't have to see a picture, but we feel it. Because, you know, imagination is also an emotion. It works at the emotional level, I should say. Feel it. I don't know. I don't see how this is going to work out, but I feel it. I know it. And that's a very important shift to make. How we think of God, how we think of ourselves, how we envision our choice or our relationship to God sets our standard of choice. And that's the three ideas: how we see God, how we see ourselves, and how we see our relationship to God. You know, that comes into play every single time we have a challenge. All three of those things come into play. If you want to understand the basis of the whole Unity message, that's it. How do we look at God? We look at God not as an old man in the sky, but as a power in which we live and move and have our being. Life, love, power, and intelligence. It's all here. And I am totally immersed in it. I'm an expression of that. That's the me part of it. I'm a spiritual being. Therefore, I am created in the image and after the likeness of God. And I can never be separate from God. I am one with God. That's the entire basis for why we think of prayer like we do, why we encourage meditation, why we see healing the way we do, why we see everything, the whole idea of prosperity. Prosperity is a principle that we see expressed throughout nature. So why do we suffer? Why do we have times when we experience lack? If we see God as the ever-present source of life, love, power, and intelligence, and we see ourselves as a complete expression of God in a relationship of oneness with God that cannot be broken, then our prayers are charged with a power that will move mountains. And we're not into moving mountains, we're into moving emotion, moving thought, moving perception. These are the mountains that we want to move. And we can do it. So if you've got something going on in your life right now, and I would be willing to bet every one of us do, just think about this. You have a choice as to how you are going to deal with this, how you're dealing with it now. Very important to keep that in mind. Okay? Thank you for coming out. We'll do this again next week.